not. Bai, indeed. Maharaja,
Maharaja.
O great king.
O great king.
Bhagavataha,
Bhagavataha.
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Maya guna vibhute.
Maya guna vibhute.
Of the transformation of the qualities of material energy.
Qualities of material energy.
Kastam,
Kastam,
the end.
The end.
Manasa,
Manasa,
by the mind.
By the mind.
Vachasa,
Vachasa,
by words.
By words.
Ba,
Ba,
either.
Either.
Adigantum,
Adigantum,
to understand fully.
To understand fully.
Alam,
Alam,
capable.
Capable.
Vibhuta Ayusha,
Vibhuta Ayusha,
with a duration of life,
with the duration of life,
like that of Brahma,
like that of Brahma.
Api,
Api,
even,
even.
Purushaha,
Purushaha,
a person,
a person.
Tasmat,
Tasmat,
therefore,
therefore.
Pradhyanena,
Pradhyanena,
by a great, by a general description of the chief places. Eva,
Eva,
certainly,
certainly.
Bhugoloka Vishesham,
Bhugoloka Vishesham,
the particular description of Bhugoloka,
particular description of Bhugoloka.
Nama Rupa,
Nama Rupa,
names and forms,
names and forms.
Mana,
Mana,
measurements,
measurements.
Lakshanataha,
Lakshanataha,
according to symptoms,
according to symptoms.
Vyakhyashyama,
Vyakhyashyama,
I shall try to explain,
I shall try to explain.
Translation and put forward by his Prabhupada. The great Rishi Sukadeva Goswami said, my dear king, there is no limit to the expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's material energy. This material world is a transformation of the material qualities, Sattaguna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna. Yet no one could possibly explain it perfectly, even in a lifetime as long as that of Brahma. No one in the material world is perfect, and an imperfect person could not describe this material universe accurately. Even after continued speculation, O King, I shall nevertheless try to explain to you the principal reasons, such as Bhugoloka, with their names, forms, measurements, and various symptoms. Purport. The material world is only 1/4 of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's creation. But it is unlimited and impossible for anyone to know or describe even in the qualification of a life as long as that of Brahma, who lives for millions and millions of years. Modern scientists and astronomers try to explain the cosmic situation and the vastness of space, and some of them believe that all the glittering stars are different suns. From Bhagavad Gita, however, we understand that all these stars, nakshatras, are like the moon, in that they reflect the sun sign. They are not independent luminaries. Bhuloka is explained to be that portion of outer space through which the heat and the light of the sun extend. Therefore, it is natural to conclude that this universe extends in space as far as we can see, and encompasses the glittering stars. Sri Sukadeva Goswami admitted that to give full details of this expansive material universe would be impossible, but nevertheless he wanted to give the king as much knowledge as he had received through the parampara system. We should conclude that if one cannot comprehend the material expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one certainly cannot estimate the expansiveness of the spiritual world. The Brahma Samhita 5.33 confirms this. Adaita Machurta Manadi Maharanti Rupam Aryam Purana Purusam Nadayoganamcha. The limits of the expansions of Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, cannot be estimated by anyone, even a person as perfect as Brahma, not to speak of any tiny scientist whose senses and instruments are all imperfect and who cannot give us information of even this one universe. Therefore, be satisfied with the information obtainable from the sources spoken by authorities like Sri Goswami. Jai Guru Maharaja Prabhupada ki. So, in our description of this cosmology, now this description of Jambudev, is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. One may wonder why such descriptions is necessary to understand, or is it possible to have even a glimpse of it? One answer that we could think about is that you see, this is a description of this cosmic this manifestation. To have a glimpse of it is extremely useful in Krishna consciousness. Especially for those individuals who are a little bit inquisitive and also would like to see why this world is created. What is the purpose? So for the purpose it is very useful. I will say to have this background to understand. Just like here, Sukadeva Goswami says that nobody will be able to understand even the lifetime of a Brahma, millions, billions of years of lifetime is working hard. It is not possible. You can see that. So therefore, to try to understand this fully, it's not going to be possible. Then what is a compromise? So the compromise will be that yes, this material universe is a very complex, sometimes very gigantic. So from these descriptions, one can have at least some conception about the inconceivable nature of the Lord's creation. And this is useful. It's like an Einstein. When Einstein's conception of God is like this, that he saw that the universe, one quality that the universe is very orderly. So this is one aspect of God, trying to show that God exists. And the second aspect that he was focusing was that it is inconceivable, this universe. You know, there's even the laws of nature, that we try to understand, that's to have a glimpse of it, but he comes to the conclusion that it is inconceivable. And in that conception is that there's beauty. There's beauty of the wonderful, this inconceivable nature of this creation, of this material manifestation. Therefore, he was in the 20th century. So when this quantum physics just was born at that time, so he was one of the pioneers. But at the same time, he could not fully appreciate about the new field called quantum physics, because there's an element in this quantum phenomena that there is a probability. Means something cannot be exactly described, but there is some probability. So you could have think that why there should be why this in the laws of nature, why that element will become an important factor. That was his premise, saying that God does not cast dice, and it came from that perception. So there was a difference of opinion between him and other scholars like Niels Bohr and many other, like Max Planck, at that time. But one good thing that he created is that it's called the cosmic religion of Einstein. It's a very much now studied today, Einstein's cosmic religion. It's about to understand about the existence of God. So in that conception, to be realized, to be convinced that it's inconceivable. This whole universe is inconceivable. So with this description, then it is therefore possible that that one can have at least a glimpse of the existence of God. So this is because when Einstein says things like that, so therefore many people also, maybe many today, many scientists begin to appreciate Einstein's conception of cosmic dualism. So for that purpose, and for us, that the, you see, to study such details in a distance, it is not possible. That the, how, you know, this, even this, our telescopes, now and all this, the instruments called for extended sense, let's say, sense perceptions, that one to comprehend through our senses, but it is impossible. It's impossible that even you can see the molecule. In the electron microscope, you see there will be some, some aspects of the big molecules like DNA, but they cannot go too far. There are unlimited things which you can't see. And therefore, it's our perception, our ability to comprehend, to understand, is extremely, extremely limited. Therefore, one feels very tiny that there are so much unknown things are oceans and oceans, but the known things are very insignificant, very small portion. But the material scientists, those who are very proud and with a little knowledge, they want to extend from their little knowledge like they want to describe the whole universe from a small portion of knowledge. It's like you see the big sphere. That if you collect two points, A and B, nearby, it is a straight line. So if you can draw a long sphere, it is a straight line. If you can conclude like that, that will be, a great blunder. So, but this is there. But at the same time, you see, in the third canto, this is a big canto, we are studying about some details of this Jamuti. I mean, it's amazing that if you continue reading this, there's 9,000 yojanas, there's a detail, description is given, the details. And, but in the third canto, in the dialogue between Vidura and Maitreya, Vidura was asking Maitreya Muni, saying that, my dear Lord, now I've heard so many other things, now please tell me the higher knowledge, please explain to me what is the highest knowledge. But at that, to that question, so Maitreya started answering that thing, but description about cosmology, how this world is created, and what are different, aspects of this universe. So therefore, this is, to have a little knowledge, to have a glimpse of this cosmic creation, is a fundamental part of our, this conscious journey, inquiry into the nature of God. Why? I mean, we would like to say, why I have been created here and why I have come here? And why all these different, different universes, what is the purpose? So to get a glimpse of the meaning and the purpose of life, to have at least, even if you say it's inconceivable, that's good enough. God will become feeling that he has a small, very tiny in our intelligence, in our ability to comprehend. So therefore, one becomes humbler, one becomes. So therefore, that becomes a qualification suitable to enter into the inquiry of spiritual nature. So that part is good enough to actually to. We may not be able to understand the details of the creation, but now in the scientific world, about this Big Bang theory. Now there are many quite good string theory, and obviously it's going in different parts of the world. And many in discussions with Koyman about this, how the universe was originated, the origin of the universe, the origin of life. So all these things are very important fields of study in sciences, the field of science. And so there are innumerable, let's say, young students and scholars and scientists are involved in trying to, let's say, to find out, you know, why, what was the origin of the universe. And then some theories come up. But then after some time, the changes came because some new things have come up. And so there's no conclusion. And there will never be a conclusion. And it's a yeah, Lord. Yeah, Sukadeva Goswami is explaining. He said, even if we have a lifetime of the Brahma's, let's say, years, and Brahma's years, the billions, and the billions of years, Brahma can live, but if you live even in that lifetime, then it will never be possible to comprehend fully about the details of this cosmic creation. So, but this is not a discouragement, but rather this is an indication that the laws, his energies, and his creative forces are inconceivable. It's called achintya. Achintya means inconceivable. So, just to come to that conclusion is good. It's like Einstein, you know, when he came to the conclusion, therefore many people with him today follow many important scientists. Because Einstein said, and therefore, his other famous saying that science without religion is lame, and that religion without science is blind. So, this is in other words, the knowledge to acquire knowledge, therefore, the scientific knowledge can give some little portion of knowledge, some aspects of knowledge, but it's not going to give the full spectrum of knowledge. But on the other hand, this is a spiritual conception. Within that realm, this inconceivability and then the conception about the existence of God, about the science of God, so this came as a part of it. But therefore, when combined together, at least say one can have a holistic approach, a holistic look into the structure of knowledge. So for the purpose, it is very very useful. So here, description given by Sukadeva Goswami is this step, that this universe is inconceivable, and it is a so vast, and so with that, and I mean, one feels very small, one feels very, very humble, and it is a, now the person is getting ready to, I mean, it is prepared, to begin actually the spiritual journey, spiritual, because in the spiritual journey is to be submissive and to be to orient our thoughts that it's not possible to even get knowledge without the blessings of the Lord, the mercy of the Lord. But therefore, one is beginning to move one's life to have that culture of humility. Now this culture of humility, that the opposite, this arrogance and this pride, these are the qualities of the egoistic type of people. So therefore, in order to save from that, it is good to have the glimpse of the spiritual, the conception of this cosmic creation. And one interesting thing has developed in the last, I would say, few years, that this has become more prominent after this 9/11, the tragedy that happened in New York, 2001. And many scientists are becoming interested about the science of God, because earlier, about 15-20 years ago, that the people speak about God as a scientist, that there's a scientist I'm very respected in the society, saying they're all discouraged and it's become really something different than others. He's not in the mainstream. I'd love for people, you know, thank you. I'd like to see you, sir. But today is no longer like that, but it is a very respectable, let's say, you can speak very freely about God among scientists and discuss. And that is to say, something will happen that he followed the tragedy. But because of that, now many scientists are wanting to know why the religious people fight each other, why do these terrorist activities, and why they engage in some kind of a very, you know, these destructive means in the name of religion. So that in that, they want to find out what is religion and what is God, what is that, and, but from a scientific, let us say, perspective. So that it is becoming very, there are quite a large number of institutions that come up in the last few years. This is to have a dialogue between scientific knowledge and religious wisdom. So therefore in that, the science of God, what is this? How do we can comprehend from a scientific argument about the existence of God? So this has come for the first time in the limelight. And like in Switzerland, there are some well-known scholars, and some of them are interested, but mostly in other parts, there is a European society with a study of the dialogue between science and religion. Yeah, also there, but mostly in the United States, I think in the last few years, there are hundreds and institutions that come up on this interface between science and religion. And so one of some of the few arguments is there are a few conceptions that to these conceptions they want to weep about the conception of God. One is, this is generally practiced by the biologists, by the life scientists. That is called intelligent design theory. I think some of you might have heard in newspapers or in magazines. It's called IDT. It's called intelligent design theory. So intelligent design theory is something against Darwin, because Darwin didn't have any idea about God. And so therefore, but these are very well-known scientists, professional. And all, they're not just a religious type, but they are fully aware of the whole, you know, any other scientist in the world. So therefore, this intelligent design theory, IDT, it's mostly in the life sciences. So for example, you study this E. coli. There's a small organism called E. coli. I think E. coli is kind of the states in the stomach and in the intestines and that. So they are kind of a little harmless. When you study this, it's a one-celled living entity. It's a unicellular organism. But such organism has so many complicated structures inside, in one cell, and they have motors, and these motors are slightly much more sophisticated, even in a well-known engineer cannot even, you know, comprehend why such intricate structures are in a small cell living being. So the scientists say that such instruments are the flagella. You see, when they swim, they go, and then they also go for food. These small living entities. But you see, the way that they do is that complicated instruments, the machinery inside the cell is so complex that they call irreducible complexity. Irreducible complexity, so that for such things cannot evolve step by step, it has to be there all together. So they're called irreducible complexity. Irreducible. It can never be reduced to any other thing. It has to come as it is, as a complete whole. And so that's the term called irreducible complexity. And so this irreducible complexity, so therefore, the only answer is intelligent design theory. It is design. It is not it's like in the Darwinian evolution, step by step, from this stage to this stage, but it's not possible. Mm-hmm. It's like when Darwin, one of the difficulties Darwin had was when he saw the eye, the tail, and the peacock's feather. Now, there's a beautiful design. Is Darwin in one of his autobiography says that whenever I see it's a peacock's tail, then I get sick. Because he don't explain why, but he here doesn't explain, cannot explain that first thing. So similarly, but today it has gone in a very scientific argument. So the intelligent design theory is flooding in the whole American campuses. Just a few months ago, there was a bit with a debate with the intelligent design theory people and the evolution Darwinian followers. This is at the University of Illinois. This is something. Some normal audience also involved in this discussion. And I saw one science magazine that said, "Has the intelligent design theory come to your campus?" It is kind of some, on the front page. Especially in America, this is like it's going very strongly. That is one argument that about the existence of God. This is from the biology. But the physicist has another conception. The physicist and the cosmologist, their conception about the existence of God is the universe is very special. This word they use is special. The universe is very special, and another word they use called the universe is a fine tune. So these are the conceptions that they use called fine tune. So fine tune means, for example, the mass of an electron, or the mass of a proton is constant. And for example, the gravitational constant, the gravity is what constant. Why? And if there is a slight change, even in the say about 10, 14 points after decimal points, if it is a slight change, that the universe will not be the way that we know it will not happen. And there won't be any life, you see. So this is also called entropic principle. Entropic principle, that's a weak entropic principle, the strong entropic principle. These are the arguments given by the physicists. So in this, the conception is that the universe has a very elaborately behind it is a kind of this is slightly similar with the design conception, but they don't say design, but they say fine tune. So fine tune is the word, but that implying that this is done by God. This is there must be a person who does all this fine tuning and all this elaborate arrangement. So for example, they give an example of, let's see, this water, H2O, let's see, two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen. Next one molecule of water. But they say the special property of water is that the angle between hydrogen and oxygen and hydrogen, so this angle has to be exactly 104.5 degree, this angle, 104.5 degree. So the angle has to be this way, so that when water it is a solid form, so that the water molecules can be less dense than the liquid water. So because of this the angular arrangement, that has to be that generally the solid is more dense. Solid is heavier than the liquid, but in the case of water, it's the opposite. The solid is lighter than liquid. So therefore, ice floats. So that polar regions. Since ice is on the top and the water is on the bottom, so therefore the living entities can live under the ice. This is because of fine tune. This universe is fine tune. Therefore, God created this whole universe. So these are some of the conceptions that exist around among the scientific circles, the argument. So these are some of the things that people use as proof about the existence of God. So this is useful, but these are spoken by the scientists, by the well-known scientists. Many Nobel laureates are involved in this conception. So at that point it is for the first time it has come in the one light. In fact, there's a big conference coming this next month at the University of California at Berkeley. It happens to be the 90th birthday of Professor Charles Towns, who is one of the pioneers in this area. Also he got Nobel Prize for discovering this laser measures. He was the discoverer. And now he is still quite active. But he's that person who promotes this himself. He said the universe is very special. And he used this word, special. And the services said, and there is no conflict between science and religion. But the science and religion both are based on faith. He said in the more deeper conception, and so for science and religion, there's no conflict. That is to say, one known professor from the University of California. So this conference, a three-day conference on his birthday. So this is happening on October 6th. I'm also going there to attend this conference. And who's involved with this conference? So there are 20 Nobel laureates from all over the world that are coming to speak about science and religion. And it's about God, about gods. It's for the first time happening in the world. Because this was inconceivable to about 30, 40 years ago. But now today, he was our keynote speaker when I organized a conference in Capital as a part of the Prabhupada Centennial program. And he was in Mayapur with his wife. And different in the Ganges, in the micro high tech boat. wanted to see the boat ride, and so very, very nice person. Always 90 years old, but you'll be surprised, amazing. He's still active, like a young man. And he goes from many places to the street, and he's a really nice person. So these are 20 Nobel laureates. So these are the Nobel laureates and the mostly from the physics. So they've gathered from all over the world and to speak about these conceptions and also from science, the science and its connection between science and spirituality. So this is a very important development. And we feel that there's a type of gathering. I think because of Charles, he's a very overpowering personality, and he has so many followers. Just by extending his work, many also people get Nobel Prize. So he has created the whole field of the science of spirituality. So that's happening in the first week of October. That will be, I think, major.
It's in America.
In the United States, at the University of California, at Berkeley. He's still the emeritus professor there, at San Francisco. This way, I think these developments are there. So therefore, to orient, to understand about the existence of God, and how to relate, and how to understand this from some kind of a rational approach, science, analytical approach, is also becoming a very, very important part in this dialogue. I think it's a very healthy development. Today, especially all these leading scientists are taking interest. So I think it is very timely that to promote the devotional principle culture of devotion. I think it is a very welcome kind of addition to the human civilization. But about Krishna consciousness, that was very timely. Because Prabhupada wanted, for Guru Maharaj, was very much thinking that because today science has so much influence to the whole worldwide community. But anyway, the scientists this little devotional understanding and they help promote this culture, spread, then the whole world will be benefited. It is definitely true that the scientists take a major part of this human civilization, and they influence a ministry in society, but they also done a little bit with the devotional aspect and the world of scripture. So therefore it is good to have a little knowledge about the cosmology, about why this world is created. And from us, from a Paramatma point of view, the inception in Big Bang, so we say big vision means that the Lord has a vision. This vision is there to inspire the sincere souls, his children, so in order to prepare themselves so that they can turn to the devotional culture, devotional life, and so that when leave this body, one can be transferred to the spiritual world. So for that purpose, this world is created, and also at inception, one can find meaning, the purpose, and then even if you don't know the whole creation, but it is from the cosmic, this manifestations, one can those sincere and serious individuals can prepare themselves how to live to a life in which one can have meaning and purpose in the whole of life. So therefore this description of Jambudev and this cosmic manifestations always invisible, but at the same time it is a useful. So I'll end here. So anybody has any thoughts, comments, and
this kind in Vaishnava philosophy or in the ISKCON or Gaudiya Math, and that kind of group, there are many scientists and educated people coming up and also joining these kind of gatherings you were mentioned. So what kind of influence you have in relation to Krishna?
Yeah, we have especially what I'm doing is called the Bhaktivedanta Institute. So at this institute there are now many students that also they have taken up some responsibility in the campuses, especially around the world, mainly focused in India. In many Indian campuses we have these students who have become full professors at some becoming leaders in the field of education and science and engineering. So that is one very positive thing which is developing, that is increasing in number daily. And also, especially in the United States, many of our Indian students go to America for higher studies.
Yes.
But they are also there. So we have this network. Because many of the students, like in Europe, we don't have so many students in here. But most of the Indian students, because the first number one choice is the American campuses. And American campuses are a large number of Indian students that they have to go to further studies, PhD students. And so,
they are related to Bhaktivedanta Trust?
Bhaktivedanta Institute.
Yeah, they are related, these Indians who go to
America. Yeah, because we have connection. So we have a network of now a large number of students. And so therefore I get all these informations, because they send me immediately what is happening in the campuses. And so this is a very good development.
Mm-hmm.
It's increasing in number. And, they are also involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one thing in our program. So I think hopefully
So it's important to relate religious. I mean, I have seen one philosopher, he say religion, philosophy, and science has to combine. It has to be combined to get a profound and unique, united understanding about the cosmic understanding. But the funny thing is, what I realize, even Islam, Muslim people, they also make a scientific approach to their religion. Everybody tries, and what I always hear, gathering, but finally the heart tells tells always the individual what is really right for me, even to a scientist. And it's funny, you know, everything has to be understood intellectually. Even God has to be understood intellectually. But if you have had a somewhat realization of God, you don't have to ask anything anymore. I mean...
That's right, but generally what happens is that in the modern society, because science is such an instrument, so now people also want to know from a scientific perception about the existence of God. And once they get idea, and then you know, they're happy, and then.
But have Islam the same strategy?
Islam also, you have to say, we have actually have many Islamic scientists. And there's one scientist at the, I have a book actually here at Bronx, but I didn't show it here. This is a, you know, this very well-known scientist from Egypt. Mm-hmm. And his name is Ahmed Jiwa. And he got his Nobel Prize in chemistry. But this chemistry is very interesting because in chemistry it's making. This chemistry is called chemical chemistry. You can detect these reactions at 10 to the minus 15, very small, in the second. 10 to the minus 15 is a very, very small scale. In that, you see fast, very, very rapid chemical reactions. So by chemistry is new, it's called chemical chemistry. And so this is very becoming very important field of study. He discovered that it's a good one for us. But he's also very religious. So he's in California, and he'll be in this conference. He's one of the speakers in this conference at Dallas. So we became friends, you know, we have contact, and I just saw him, and I'm gonna see him again. Conference. He is a professor at the called Caltech, California Institute of Technology, in Pasadena, California. Caltech is a very, very high-powered institution in the world. Many of the most of the Nobel laureates are there. They have, and also it's very, very, you know, very open, very creative. I mean, they appreciate a lot of creativity, so therefore they make everybody free and think in their own way. And so that is a very healthy academic environment. It's number one in the United States. I say any new talks has to come from Caltech. This is a place. He's a professor there. But he's Islam. And he's very nice.
So religious plays an important part in this kind
It's becoming very, very important. There's another person called Phillips, it's William Phillips. So, bottom line, Phillips is also not worry. Phillips is young, he's about in his 60s, and Joel is in the mid 50s and 60s, still not very old, but very dynamic and very highly respected in the world. And Phillips is, I met Borodin, it's a century when I was in the United States. And so these people are promoting about this God. This do that because to identify who's a scientist who speak about God is, nowadays you can find from the internet, you go to the internet, and it all from the gathering, of the scientific gathering. And so, these are all Charlestown, they all got Nobel Prize saving up a child's work. The laser, they all use the laser, this laser technology. And so they say, Philip say, God is a person. It's very, very close to our philosophy. And he said, God is a person. He said, I don't know why Einstein, this is a brilliant, he could understand about the personal aspect of God, but God is a person. He is the one who is speaking very strongly that God is a supreme person. The William Phillips. And he is involved in church. He's, I think, the Methodist. But he's involved in the church, and he speaks very strongly, loudly about the existence of God as a person, and so I relate as a, it's very much like, you know, very close to our conception, in the Vaishnava conception. So so there are these important scientists are now coming out, speaking out about this.
It's interesting, scientists discussion much more interesting than
more
than political discussion, because in political discussion often power and ego is a very strong component when they discuss.
And another important among the scientists, among the Nobel laureates, about prayer. The prayer, that's what Nobel laureate in the University of Pennsylvania called McDermott. So McDermott, he was telling me that this a while ago that there is about 20-25 Nobel laureates are discussing about the power of prayer and the scientists, and they're all Nobel laureates at the moment. So they discuss about the influence of prayer in the immune system, in a scientific way, the immune system, that the, you know, if you have to have a prayer, that the, you know, anything can be transformed.
I think Maharishi is quite advanced in that.
Yeah, so therefore all these important, you know, scholars and scientists are now speaking out. So they see, nowadays, this is free, you can speak anything you want about, you know, especially in connection to God. So therefore this is for the first time, we see that the whole scientific community is, you can go to speak, and nobody's saying that you're crazy, you're a robot. This is definitely a very nice. And here in this country, there are some scientists who also are in favor of God, that is, a conception of God. It is a very interesting stage of development.
I'm wondering if the scientists will accept the theory of, as the Prabhupada used to say, achintya theory.
Achintya?
Yes, achintya. Achintya, you know, as you said, without accepting, Prabhupada used to say, without accepting the achintya theory, it's impossible to understand.
That is correct. Prabhupada also enjoyed to discuss it in the morning while it's achintya. This is inconceivable. It's like Einstein's his own conception that this universe is he said the most beautiful thing in nature is this inconceivable nature of the universe. He said most beautiful, and the famous quote that he produced. So our Guru Maharaj was telling me that now in this body just our nail is coming. But the nail is, nail is almost like a dead, like a dead matter, the nail. Because how this nail is coming, you know, is inconceivable from this body. And so that means, life, this matter is coming from life. So the Prabhupada is explaining that body is inconceivable. It's called achintya shakti. The inconceivable energy of the Lord. And this definitely true that Prabhupada also said that unless one accepts that the inconceivable nature, that it will not be able to go too far.
Inconceivable means?
Inconceivable.
No, I mean, that does not mean it does not exist. That is what scientists says, no?
No, inconceivable means your power of understanding is extremely limited.
Yes.
They are beyond. They are much more beyond that we cannot understand. But the effort is the vastness of this knowledge is inconceivable.
So
cannot comprehend.
Yeah. There is any connection between achintya shakti and as it is, and they say, the mystery of the faith.
The mystery of faith. of faith. Maybe there could be some connection. Maybe feel for for exploration.
Yes, that's sometimes the priest, they say, when they have an answer,
yeah,
they say, it is the mystery of the faith.
That's what it means. I think there is some connection. But let's see, faith in shape is a spiritual quality. Faith. It is genuine faith, it's a spiritual quality. And so faith has an inconceivable nature, so even inconceivable that this faith would say, yes, it is there. And I think this looks like there must be some close connection. It's all even inconceivable to Chinta, and this faith, I think, might be some.
I have experienced the Jnani Yogis, they always say, the Jnani Yogis, they always try to understand things intellectually, and then they say, Bhakti Yogi is good because it's a creation in the mind. It's a creation in the mind, it's exactly what you said, it's there, faith leads to that. And I did this kind of yoga education, and there were Jnani Yogis, all Jnani Yogis. And I was there a little bit with Bhakti, but on the other side I was always like, it's okay, I know. They said always, I'm sorry for you. We have the knowledge.
Do you believe that the nakshatras, the stars out there, just reflecting our sunlight?
But yeah, Prabhupada says that the Rahu, the slight beam of the moon, is the reflection from one big star. Because in its universe, conception of the universe is that there is one big sun. That in this universe, our universe, the visible universe that we live right now, is called, regarded as one of the smallest universe. So here we have the sun. So the sun, from the sun, we see the night luminaries, and there are the reflections from the sun's rays. So it's like that. Similarly, there are innumerable universes, but these universes are much bigger than what we have here. So therefore, that means the sun must be very big. And even the Brahma, it asks, one interesting thing is that in this universe, there is also one Brahma. And our Brahma is only four heads. It's four heads. The four heads means, four heads can comprehend, some small portion. But in the bigger universe, say Brahma will have eight heads, and 16 heads, and 24 heads. And so, in a larger universe, that Brahma will have much more capacity to manage that the big universe. Therefore, but the scientists say that the stars that we see are also suns. Therefore, it is something that I cannot say. I said I have no idea.
So the Buddha, he made the mathematical proof that the dvipas of Bhumandala are correlating with the dimensions of the planetary orbits, the diameters of the planetary orbits. He figured out that 3,000 old scriptures give exact figures of how much diameter the planetary orbits have. So that brings the idea closer that maybe we should change the label universe with solar system. It is just a label, actually.
It is good to test in a satsang, as a conception, kind of day, one can see if it is a, we can explain in some realistic terms, and people will be, they'll appreciate. And on that one, we need to someone explore these conceptions and try to make it, let's say, a little more understandable. And he's trying, but I'm not sure what it would be, is it the right model or not. It needs to be tested.
It seems we have at least got two models of the universe.
Now it is an exploration. But we want to have a planetarium in our headquarters in Mayapur. So I think you know, that's a big study. Is it right or wrong? So, thank you for coming. I'll see you again. I'm coming back in the 11th of October. I'm coming from the United States. After this conference, I'll bring you some messages on the conference went. Jai Sri Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Jai Gaurinda ki.
Jai.
Jai Baladev Swadamahani ki.
Jai.
Jai Gaurvaka Vrindi ki.
Jai.